Setting Up Shop.
Hello, dear listeners, and welcome back to Setting Up Shop, your favorite podcast, all that just happens to be about three creative people making things and trying to make a business out of it. A bit like you guys, or maybe someone you know. I don't know how you found this podcast. This may even be your first episode. If so, there's plenty for you to listen in our back catalogue. Welcome to you all. I am Dan, and I am a woodturner from England. And with me, as always, are my two co-hosts, Rasmus, a blacksmith from Norway.
Hello.
And Heidi, a potter from America.
Hey, hey.
There we go. So we are going to talk today about absolute failure, like a failure that you could possibly recover from and potentially how to recover from it. And this topic is mostly brought to you this week by Rasmus, as we were talking about absolute failure. And we all know, those of you who have listened to many episodes before, that, you know, this is stereotypical of Rasmus. He's just completely failed. And it's amazing that he's got this far in life. Which is all, of course, sad, sad truths that we shouldn't ever have to listen to.
I am as surprised as all of you.
Well, you know, your life hasn't been as long as most of the rest of us has, so you've still got time. It's absolutely fine. But if you would like to just briefly outline what it is that you're saying you have absolutely failed at, that you feel has been a catastrophic situation for yourself this week with the current job, and we can go from there.
Yeah. This week has been an interesting one. I had an order come in, and this is talking a few months back, of a guy that was getting into timber framing, and he wanted me to make copies of his grandfather's old hewing axes, because the hewing axes were, I think, pretty old already when his grandfather was using them. So he wanted brand new ones, but based upon the same design. And I'm like, yeah, cool. Like, I can do this during the summer, like, take my time, figure it out, do it right. And then other shit happened, and suddenly you don't have the time to figure it out right. And then you try doing it anyway. And after spending a week and a half on what I thought would be like a 2 or 3 day job, it's like, no, sorry. I have to go to the client and just say, I have failed utterly. My forge is actually burned out, and can't get close to the welding temperature I need to make these axes in that good old traditional way they're supposed to be made. And basically tell the client, like, yeah, I can't do this now. I would love to try again, but it'll be a few weeks before I can rebuild that forge. And he has started school and kind of needs his axes.
Right. Okay. So you're over budget in time and materials, probably.
Yeah.
You've burnt out your forge. Mm. You've disappointed the customer, potentially, and you've not met a deadline. I'll say you've wasted materials, which isn't necessarily true, because being metalwork, you can potentially recover some of them for other projects. But you've gone through materials and everything else. So what is there that you can recover from this?
I mean, I can learn from it, hopefully. I mean, there's still a lot of things I have learned about what I've been doing so far. One is just the forge I currently have. It started out okay. I were able to make like a test pieces, but they had enough issues that I weren't happy about them.
Okay.
And from there, I wanted to redo them, make them nicer, make them better. And I did, like, before they utterly failed. Well, the crucial part that failed, or usually fails on an axe like this, is when you wrap the steel around the eye of the axe where the handle goes and you try to weld it back together.
Yeah.
I was doing the smart thing and putting in some high carbon steel in sort of that wedge, because that has a lower welding temperature, so it should be easier. But when I reached that point on the two axes, my forge was already so burned out on the second time around, that is, that I couldn't actually make it stick.
Right.
And at that point, it's sort of, yeah, I could try to cheat a little bit. And I did. And it still didn't really want to work. It still didn't really want to get there. So I have learned a lot about how I actually can forge out this shape, how to think ahead and plan ahead and sort of get a lot of the forging work done already before I wrap the eye and do the welding, so that I only just need to drift the eye to final size afterwards, which is a whole other technical bit of making like asymmetrical axe eyes before you actually wrap them and make it into an eye shape. So like, there's a lot of learning that's gone on, and I'm happy about the experience of learning those things. I'm just a bit annoyed at having spent a whole week and there's literally nothing to show for it,
except for
a forge that is now barely functional.
Okay. So if we look at it from a different perspective, then have you asked any other axe makers you know for advice?
A little bit, not specifically to the issues I've been having, because most of them actually use coal forges, and I don't have a coal forge.
Would a coal forge get to a higher temperature?
Yes, yeah. You can easily get coal to burn at 2,000 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
A gas forge usually caps out at around 1,300 at maximum. Okay. The installation, mine is already 2 years old, and I've used it hard, so it weren't exactly at like top spec before I started. And then running it at like 2 bars of heat and all of that, I just destroyed it at this point.
Just too much. Are you considering investing in a coal forge?
No, but I like to spend money, so instead I'll spend a lot more and get induction.
Okay.
Do you have a friend near enough by who's got a coal forge that you could potentially take the pieces you've mostly worked to and see if you can finish off the eyes there?
Yeah, in theory I could. I could go, I mean, closest, honestly, now I realize the closest fellow I could have asked would have been 20 minutes away.
Oh no.
But this was sort of, this is me being like stuck in my head, like, I need to figure this out by myself, but like I need to do this in my forge for some reason.
And here you are building this whole community around you.
Yeah. Yeah. And like in this week I've talked to other people, like, and even if I were like going, oh yeah, let me drive 2 hours to the guy that is like an expert at making these axes and pester him about, like, listen, can I just borrow your forge and have you look over my shoulder for a little bit and yell at me when I make mistakes? That would probably have to make this gun a lot faster and quicker. But it's one of those things where, like, I failed enough the first time around. I was like, okay, I'm not happy about this. I want to try again. And then I did, and I spent ages trying to make that second attempt work under the time constraints and everything, because like, it felt like it was too much of investment going somewhere else. Because I thought like, oh no, I just need to get this thing to work and then everything should be fine. And it wasn't.
But. So it sounds like, I'm sure there's probably a technical term for this somewhere, but it sounds to me like, and I've done exactly what you're talking about, because you're business minded and because this is a business job, you've got so focused on budget of time and resources that you've not been able to be objective and step back and say, after you'd made the first one and it hadn't gone the way you wanted it to, recognizing that maybe you didn't quite have enough knowledge and there is this person who you could go and drive to 2 hours away and potentially have the conversation with, or being able to understand that the reason why things had failed after the first time is potentially because you can't get your forge hot enough or whatever, you know, the list of reasons why it's failed, but you've done it all mentally. Yeah. But the problem with that is you're mentally stacking up the solutions versus your budget of time and resources, which has then meant you've focused so much on, but I haven't got time, that you've spent all of that extra time doubling down and compounding all the problems. And therefore it's gone from what could have been still a 2 day build into a 5 day build. And knowing what you're like, your days are not 8 hours. So you've probably spent 10 to 12 hours a day for 5 days on this.
Not fully that bad, but it's been long days.
But 9 to 10 hours. And I totally understand it, because you've got so in this zone of like, I need to get this done and it needs to be in my space and I need to achieve this. So I need to prove to yourself that you can do it, and various other reasonings why. But that's why this conversation is valuable, because you've still not achieved what you need to achieve. But maybe you can step back a bit more objectively now and go, right, okay, so I've missed my deadline. I potentially upset my customer. I've ruined my forge. So realistically, the only way now is kind of up, because you've gained a load of knowledge. You've understood a lot more about what you need to do. And so realistically, if you went and drove 2 hours to the expert on this, and you probably brought him a crate of beer or chucked him a bit of cash for a quick lesson or something, you'd probably be able to make those two axes in one hit and learn a bit more from an expert in that.
Yeah.
And also then recognize the next time you take on a job like this, maybe you just drive there straight off in the first place and go, can I borrow your coal forge and pay you for the space? And then you've got the backup of that guy being in the space with you as well, who can offer advice.
Yeah. I mean, I think
it's easy for me to say all of this.
Yeah.
Because it's
you're right on a lot of this. You're right on a lot of this. And next time, I've already realized that Well, also the problem kind of has been that my power hammer is actually a bit too small to work this size of material. Yeah. It gets the job done, but it takes like 3 or 4 times as long.
You're justifying upgrading your power hammer already. Okay, I like this.
Yeah. No, I'm, well, a little bit, but no, actually, I didn't think as far as going and just borrowing a mate's forge and his big tools because he's set up for this, which I definitely should do next time.
Yeah.
And if the client doesn't want his money back, then I will ask and do that in 2 weeks' time. But also I'm realizing, well, the limiting factor now is the gas forge.
Yeah.
I've already been thinking about I should upgrade to getting induction, but that's like a $6,000 investment.
Yeah.
But there's so many other things I would like to have the induction forge. And this is one of them where the heating goes so much quicker and it also gets so much hotter that I've spent at least half the time just waiting for things to get hot.
Okay.
And if I can sort of just reduce that time by, I don't know, 3/4 or something.
Yeah.
Then also suddenly I'm eliminating time spent just waiting for it to get hot, because with induction, it is stupidly fast. Another, I'm also skipping a couple of heats because I can now a lot easier see that it is more than hot enough. The steel is quote unquote stickier. It welds easier.
Yeah.
And I don't have to spend a lot of time second guessing myself or redoing welds that didn't go as well the first time around.
So it'd probably be a really useful exercise for you to physically write down or type out a list of the faults as you see them at the moment, you know, such as you can't get the thing hot enough or whatever, things that you see that are wrong with the product that you've started to make and not completed, and then a list of options for fixing those faults. Because some of those will be different equipment, but having been where you are now with other projects, I know that that will be at the back of your mind, irritating the hell out of you until you have achieved that project.
Yeah.
I would strongly suggest going to your friend's forge and getting the project done, even if the customer has asked for their money back, because then you know you can do it.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got them done and ready. And then you can go back to him once you've done that and say, hey, look, I know you've had the money back and you've probably had them done by someone else, but I've got them now. Here's some pictures of them, blah, 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 you know, and you could potentially even then regain the customer. And I would suggest that that might be an option to do first, rather than potentially going down the rabbit hole of going, this is another reason why I need an induction forge.
Well, I still need to save up enough money to make that investment.
Exactly.
Which is a whole lot of conversation in all of this. It's more like, oh, this is another thing that I think I could have done the job. Like, even if I just had to try twice and spend this entire week learning, at least I think I would have succeeded, because the welds would actually be up to temperature and they would stick, instead of barely not, but looking like they were okay for a little while, and then you stress it and it pops.
Yeah.
But also sort of on the side of the power hammering not being big enough, part of this is also I didn't plan well enough in advance to have a reasonable size stock on hand.
Right.
To actually forge this out of.
So your mistakes list is getting bigger.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Which is totally understandable as well.
But one of the techniques I used to make one of the first versions of the axe is a very, very old traditional way, more like back to like Middle Ages Viking era, where you basically just start with flat bar and you're stacking up the height of the pieces with forge welding instead of forging everything down from a large piece.
Okay.
And when I did that, the forge was hot enough to actually make all of those welds nice, because when I was fed up yesterday, I took all of my attempts and I just cut them to pieces to see, okay, where were actually the failure points? At what stage in progress here did things start to fall apart? And on the first attempts, when one of the issues I had there was like I was running too much oxygen into forge, so I actually had a cold spot with excess oxygen that meant that the side of the axe was scaling up too much, which ate away at the steel, so it ended up being too thin. But all of the welds there were good. So that way of making the axe actually worked, I just did it poorly.
Okay, so there's two things that sprung to mind when you said this, and I need to get Heidi's feedback on this as well in a minute. And this is going to be me. The first one is me projecting massively and not what I actually think has happened with you. In this instance, if this had been me, I would have to accept the fact that this is my craft humbling me from having reached a level of overconfidence and borderline arrogance with my skill. Because I would have gone, oh, well, I think I've got the stock. Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure I know what I'm doing. And I've not prepped enough and respected the fact that I've never made this thing before. And therefore, multiple mistakes happen, not just because I don't know what I'm doing, but because I've not put in the foundational groundwork to overcome some of the really basic things. And I'm not saying that's what you've done, but that's the sort of experience that I've had. When this has happened to me in the past with similar things, I've definitely recognized, oh, that's me being overconfident. That's my craft kicking me back and going, hey, you've not been doing this long enough to accept the fact that you can get away with that. So that's just one thing that
craft humbles you.
Yeah. Okay. And the second one is the flip side to that, which is almost like the mirror opposite, is the fact that you've clearly got enough knowledge and understanding of your craft to be able to completely scientifically analyze exactly where things have gone wrong when you've cut apart your piece that you've made.
Mm.
Okay. So similar, if I was turning a bowl, or if Heidi was throwing a piece and both of us sliced them in half, you'd be able to see exactly where, oh, I went too thin here, that's not consistent there, I was overconfident here, or whatever, you know, all of those kind of things. And I think that's a really valuable lesson for anyone listening to. You realize in some ways how far you have come in your craft. If you can make a piece that you are able to take to bits and look at and understand where it could be better, that is a really valuable thing. A little bit harder when it's something like crochet, but if you're able to take a physical thing that you've created and it's something based on a loose shape or form that you've made many times before, and then you go, hey, do you know what? This one's not even for a project. This isn't for a person or a product. This is me making simple form number one that I've done 100 times before. Now let's slice it in half or take it to bits and go, how do I get better at that? What is the failing on this? Can I improve my technique, or do I need a new piece of kit for that?
Mm.
Does that make sense? Because that's what you've just done with cutting the axe up and gone, oh, I can see where this technique here was working, but then the lack of oxygen here and this, there's a whole stream of processes going through your head based on over a decade's worth of forging knowledge, where you're frustrated, you're annoyed because it's failed, but you can see where, and now you can start to assimilate and go, right, so I need to fix this, 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 and this, and then I need to try this technique, and then we'll try again. It's the whole scientific method, isn't it? You have a hypothesis, you go forth, you start it, then when it fails, you come back and you take it to bits and go, right, how do I move forwards?
Yeah.
But you've just not applied that bit at the beginning.
yeah. Which I guess is why this is a therapy session.
Well, I turn it into them for everyone, don't I?
A little bit. This time it's on me, though.
What are your thoughts on this so far, Heidi? I don't want to take up the whole conversation.
I mean, there's obviously hubris involved with any time that you take on a commission from somebody and you're like, oh yeah, all of my applied knowledge, I can figure out how to make this thing that I've never made before. I think we all do it, especially as craftspeople, because we're constantly hungering for the next thing that we want to, you know, tackle. And sometimes we get maybe a little overconfident in our tools or our processes or, you know, our knowledge base. And it sounds like you had a cacophony of just about everything that could possibly go wrong in this project went wrong. And some of it was predictable, right? But others isn't, you don't know until you know, right? You don't know until you try. And I think for a lot of makers out there, like just looking at some things, like talking with my husband, Ben, where I will blindly chase an idea with utmost confidence that I can make something. And he is very much more conservative when he approaches a project. Like if somebody comes to him and is like, I'd like you to make this thing for me, he's more often saying no, because he's never done it before. And I'm more like, yeah, sure, I can figure it out. So, you know, there's like two different mindsets that happen when somebody approaches you with something like that. And I don't know, like if you hadn't at least tried, like if you just, what was your option, right? Like somebody comes to you, can you make this thing for me? You say, I sure can try. I haven't done this before. And then you put in all of your knowledge to build it out. So on one hand, that's hubris. On the other hand, that's you being courageous in what you're doing. So like you can spin it either way. You can be like,
yeah,
oh, you should never have taken it on if you didn't have proof that you could do it. But the other way of looking at it is, wow, how courageous of you to try something you've never done before and put it into practice. 9 times out of 10 for you and for me, it works. Right? 9 times out of 10. That's not bad. 9 times out of 10, somebody comes and says, can you make this thing for me?
Yeah.
And I'm able to figure it out within, you know, maybe 2 attempts and it's fine. And everything goes great. And now I've got another thing that I can add to my bedpost of things that I've accomplished and, you know, whatever. That one time can be either crippling or inspiring.
Yeah.
And I see you taking it less as crippling and more, how do I apply my learnings here to my future to make sure that A, I can take learnings from this in a positive way, and B, how do I make it right for the customer, and can I make it right for the customer? So I think you're making some valid learnings from the experience to be like, okay, you know, you could just be like, I'm just going to go get drunk and not think about it. You could have lied to your customer.
Yeah.
You could have just said like, yeah, you could have not cared about what failure meant to your customer, but you were honest, you were open about what you can do to fix it. And you're giving them the opportunity to say, that's not good enough, I would like my money back. Or, you know what, totally understand. Can I have the pieces back that I gave you for reference so that I can start my schooling? And then you follow up with, you know, giving me something that I can use through the history of my career, which is, I think, probably what they're bound to say to you. But I'm proud of you for not getting hung up on maybe making a poor decision, thinking that you could just do it without help. I think that's probably my takeaway there is like, you are building this big community and it was something that you haven't done before. Maybe lean on that community a little bit more before diving in head first would be like my only, hey, maybe this is somewhere that you should apply that first before you buy more equipment. Cause it may be that you go and use somebody's forge or you go and learn these techniques and you're like, actually, if I just tweak this one thing in my shop, I don't have to buy a new hammer. I don't have to buy a new forge. I don't have to invest $6,000. It's just a slight tweak because they taught you a trick, right?
Yeah.
So I would do that before you invest $6,000 in maybe equipment that you're not necessarily needing right now. It's like would be good for future self, but that my only takeaway on that part.
Yeah. I wouldn't buy an induction forge just because this project annoyed me. It is because it is on the list of things I really, really want, because forge welding mild steel in a gas forge, as of this experience as well, proves that it can be really tricky. And it's just so much easier if you have a really localized, super hot heat, like a coal forge, except I don't want to faff about rebuilding the chimney and getting a coal forge installed in the current workshop.
Yeah. Plus it's sooty.
Yeah, plus I actually like having lungs. I'm one of those people.
You can buy one of those helmet things that everybody's been advertising on the Instagrams.
I can send you mine if you like.
Small environment.
Microwave.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to name it. They're not sponsoring us. Jesus.
No, they're not.
I would just like to say also, like, this project started out something I took on because like I had in my mind plenty of time to figure things out. And learning how to make these axes is high up on my list because I have made very few axes. I don't feel like I'm good at it. Now, like camping axes, Viking axes, that kind of smaller hatchet styles, they are easier also because I can do a lot of the work by hand. I don't necessarily need a power hammer.
Right.
But making these like 3, 4, maybe 5 kilo axes, that's a bit different beast.
Yeah.
And I want that skill. I want to be able to talk with some authority about like at least how to go about it and what the usual pitfalls are, kind of like what I have now experienced.
Yeah.
So this is quite interesting because this is definitely where you and I approach things from a different way, in the sense that one of the things in the future I'd like to make are wooden turned boxes. Okay. And I've done very briefly a very short like half day course with someone on one, And the reason why I've got those on my list to do in the future is because they're fiddly and they require patience, both things I'm bad at. So I want to get good at that to try and sort of overcome that element of putting things off in my woodturning. But the way in which I would do that, the last thing I would do would be to throw a random bit of wood on the lathe and kind of approach it and work things out as I go along based on demos I've seen and stuff I vaguely half remember. That's not to say that's a bad way of doing it. It's just not the way that I would approach it. The first thing I would probably do is buy a book that I actually already happen to own on how to turn them. The second thing I would do is book on a course, a one-to-one tuition course with someone I highly respect who's made a lot of them. And then I would probably like make copious notes about all of that. And then I would start with a stupidly simple one to begin with.
You know, all of that sounds really smart when you put it that way.
It sounds smart. What it is fear. It is fear manifesting in the sense of what if I get it wrong? What if it goes wrong? And the answer is, well, what if it does go wrong? It doesn't matter. It's not a commission for a person. This is just you trying to personally develop something. So what happens if it goes wrong? You're not going to get hurt. Because I'm practical enough and I'm sensible enough that I should be able to avoid those pitfalls. Worst case scenario, you make some shavings, you destroy a piece of wood, and I've learned a few things from it. But I won't have learned from the way I learn anywhere near as much as if I'd gone to someone who's done this for many years and gone, hey, can you show me how to make this style of thing and help me understand where I am having problems or going wrong or like tool control or other things that will change. So like when I did the 1 day or the half day box making course, and I went there and I made a box and it still goes together really, really well. Fantastic. At no point did the tutor talk about the fact that what he would normally do is rough out the blanks, tape them together with the masking tape and write the date and time at which he'd finished them on, and then put them in the ambient temperature of his workshop for a minimum of 24 hours so that they can do all the moving that they're going to do before he would then actually hollow them out and make a box. Because that's the difference between a hobbyist having a go at a thing and a craftsman who is selling a product that he knows that when the person uses it now or 6 months or a year from now, he has reduced as many possible variables that would stop that being a satisfying thing to open and look at and play with.
Yeah.
So it's not just about the basics. As Heidi's already said, there may be that one trick that you don't know because it's not recorded anywhere, because this is a handed down older technique, that guy who's 2 hours away from you go, oh, well, I just do this. And to him, he's done it thousands of times before, but you will see it. And then something will just click in your brain and you'll go, damn it, that's what I needed to do.
Yep.
That's like the one thing. And now everything's sticky. Now everything's working. Now everything's rolling and it's all good and it's all fine. And actually, I didn't need it to get to 2000 degrees. I just needed to know this one bit of information.
There probably is something exactly like that.
So I think you should message the guy now and book in some time to go see him.
Yep. I'll do that.
if we're going down the therapy route. But for our wider audience, the concept here in particular of absolute failure is the fact that this is a paid commission. And, whatever the reasoning being behind it, whether it's overconfidence, lack of preparation or misunderstanding or a failure of equipment, there will come a time if you are trying to become a business person with your craft, there will come a time where you will feel utterly crushed and horrible and a miserable failure. Because something's not gone the way that it should do and you will feel like you've let a person down.
Yeah.
Okay. There are three takeaways from that. The first one is, if you feel like that because you don't feel you've made something to the standard it should be for the customer, that is actually, I would argue, a good thing because it, as Heidi mentioned, it's because you care. It's because you care about your craft. You care about what the piece says about you as a person, about the skill set that you've developed and about the things that you're putting out into the world and the wider story that is associated with you, your brand, whatever you want to call it. If you don't care and you go, oh, that'll do, then I and some people might not like this, but I would argue you're not a craftsperson. You're someone trying to make money off the back of a skill that you've vaguely got some level of kind of competency in. And I'm sorry if that upsets someone. And I'm more than happy if you want to reach out to me in a direct message and have a conversation about it. This isn't an argument. This isn't slating anyone. This is having a conversation. Okay, both things are fine as long as you're honest about who and what you are. The other two takeaways are, which I'm probably going to forget one of them by now, you will get knocked back. All right. But it's how you react to that. As Heidi said, your options could easily have been you go screw this and go and get drunk, which is quite possibly the worst thing that you could do. And when we say get drunk, it might not be get drunk. You might just go and immerse yourself in something completely different and procrastinate and, you know, whatever you're, you know, overindulge in food or whatever it is, because you're hiding and you need the comfort. As we've said already a couple of times in this episode, building a community of creative people around you is really, really, really important. If you are a solo working craftsperson, if you're fortunate enough to be in a position like Rasmus, where this is your actual day job, this is your source of income, you need people that you can ring up and just go, guys, I just screwed up a project. Can I just talk you through it? It doesn't matter if they're not the same type of craft or whatever. You just need someone who's going to be able to like talk you down off the ledge, as it were, and kind of help you walk through things, help you see things from a different perspective and all of that kind of stuff. And then the final one is, if you haven't run away and got drunk, if you haven't, you know, if you've managed to recover from the fact that you feel overwhelmingly sort of like crushed, what do you then do? What's your analysis? What do you then pursue? Let's say you've gone and spoken to friends, you've done all of that. That's great. You need to make a plan on how to move forward. Not just think about it, but physically write it down so there's a reminder there for you. Whether you keep a journal of this kind of stuff, put it in there so that you can kind of like remember, because you know what? It will happen again.
Oh, yeah.
And it might be 6 months, it might be 6 years, it might be 30 years from now, but it will happen again. And it's how you deal with it now will help you know how to deal with it next time. Like, make a special bookmark for that journal and put that thing in there so you know where that information is. Like, it's so important. Learning from a failure or your first attempt in learning, as we've mentioned a few times, learning how to move forward and putting a framework in place so that you can go, oh, okay, this really sucks. I've not met a deadline. I've ruined a load of this, blah, 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 blah. What is it that went wrong? Here is a list. How do I fix it? Here's an alternative list. Who do I want to speak to about this? And putting those things there. And anytime we say stuff on this podcast, guys, it's not because we've got all the answers. This is as much for me as it is for you, as it is for Rasmus, as it is for Heidi. This is literally, I'm going to go and do this in my journal in a moment. I'm going to go write all this stuff down and I'm going to make a bookmark for it. I've not done it before. Half of this is just coming off the top of my head, which is why it sounds gibberish and half thought through. But all of this kind of stuff is so important in the long term for your mental health as a craftsperson and taking things forwards.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I don't believe ever that there's any such thing as a master craftsperson who hasn't felt like exactly as Rasmus has felt at least once in their time of getting from A to B or getting there. And if they say they haven't, they've either got dementia or they're lying.
Yeah.
You know, because this is how you learn. This is how you like recover. And this is how you then, you have to push the boundaries of what you feel you are capable of doing. And then things will go horribly wrong and it will cost you time and money and all the rest of it. And that's how you then go forward.
And also, ironically enough, like stepping out of your comfort zone means that you need to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of exactly what that sentence means. You are doing things you're not comfortable with so that you can learn from them. This is part of that, and failure is part of that. I think Adam Savage said on Mythbusters a while back, like, failure is always an option.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to counter talk about that rather than, you know, and that's absolutely true. But as a Navy SEAL, I was reading or watching a review of or something, but one of the things he said that stuck with me is, in order to become an elite person, whatever it is you're doing, you have to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yes. That's something we learned a lot about in the army.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that that's for everyone and that this isn't something I adhere to all the time, because I very much like my comforts. I hate camping. I would always rather stay somewhere warm with a roof over my head.
But there's degrees to it, though. Like, you don't need to, like I did now, jump in with both feet, try to figure everything out at once.
Yeah.
I could have done the smart thing and gone like, phoned one of my friends that literally have made hundreds, if not a couple of thousand axes like these, and gone like, so listen, I have this commission. Can I learn a bit from you? And then I can figure everything else afterwards. But like, if I can pick up the basic tips, and then it's just a matter of practice afterwards, kind of.
Yeah. And I think the thing is as well, because I know some people have put off asking that question from fellow craftspeople because they're worried that the people will say, well, why didn't you just give me the job, right? Well, the reality is we're all nerds, right? And very few people are willing to talk to us about what we're passionately invested in. So if someone rings you up and go, hey, I know you've made hundreds of this one thing and I'm about to go and make my own, what are some basic things to avoid doing wrong? The little nerd part of our brain will get really excited and go, oh, you want to do the thing? Excellent. I get to talk to you specifically about my very, very niche bit of information mm-hmm. for as long as you can endure it.
Potentially longer.
And you've asked me to, and now you can't escape. So don't be afraid to ask for help. I mean, I have it all the time, and certainly in the wood turning world in the UK, there's three or four like professional wood turners. This is their job. And I'll pop them a message and I'll get a response back normally the same day, sometimes within an hour. I'll go, oh, I wouldn't do it like that. This is how I would normally do it. And all three of them will give me a different answer because they're the different styles of doing stuff. But you can then go, oh, I like that bit and I like that bit and I like that bit. This is within the boundaries of my comfort / discomfort zone. So I can make that small step and then I can try and move forwards. Hmm. And it helps. It really does. People want to share their craft. That's why they're on social media. Like that's why we're here talking to you guys.
Or they're just like attention sluts, but that's a different conversation.
I mean, I will that's need to pop fans. A few more buttons.
Oh, sorry. Different
get, platform. Oh, sorry. Oh, okay.
Different platform. Yeah.
Different platform.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
How do you think black spinning content does on OnlyFans?
I don't like how can it do any better than it already does on everything else? There's fire, there's things being hit with hammers and sparks and whatever. There's an excuse for you being sweaty. I mean, come on. You're probably more on the front of any form of spicy romance book than any other type of craft. You know, you don't see the village carpenter spicy romance book, do you?
Oh, too many splinters.
The shavings and stuff everywhere. Oh, this is really uncomfortable. Sawdust. Go away. You know, it doesn't happen.
Smelly soot.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like I'm going to start a side hustle.
There you go, Rasmus. There's your there's your learnings from today. Just start an OnlyFans. You won't have to worry about access.
That's how you fund your induction page.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then I tell you what, if you genuinely were able to fund an induction forge by that, you'd have to get a sticker saying as sponsored by OnlyFans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I need to make that sticker anyway, just so I can give it to people.
I think that's another one for the group handout. There must be one already out there.
Honestly, I'll actually check.
Did you say you're going to put one on your wheel?
She did.
Spin me right round, baby. Oh, this feels like the after show.
It does a little bit. We'll talk about stickers in the after show, maybe. But yeah, I mean, obviously, Heidi... You and me, you know, we haven't had clearly any epic failures recently, which is why we haven't brought up examples from our own situations. But
I've certainly had failures. I mean, I think with pottery, it's just failure after failure.
I feel like pottery's cheating because like it'll fail, and as long as it's before, you know, whilst it's still on the wheel, you can just kind of like reuse the clay.
Yeah, until you dump a whole tray of bisqueware. When it's Christmas time and you have to redo it all. I have missed deadlines. I haven't had too many abject failures where I've had to go back to clients and say, I just can't do this thing that you asked me to do. I did have a couple of years ago, a project that I was doing for a local coffee shop where she had set parameters that were tight for like getting it done and had asked me to experiment a bit with glazes. And fortunately, I was up front at the start and said, like, you know, this glaze won't work like that other glaze. So I can't say that this treatment is going to turn out. And I'm going to just have to go for it with the whole lot in order to meet your timing. And I think that the failure there was that I didn't get it in writing. Yeah. And I didn't get payment up front.
Yeah.
Because, or at least partial payment up front, which ultimately meant that I ate it. And then, you know, she hasn't come back and asked for anything else. Which, you know, it wasn't a total loss, but in the same, it was kind of a disappointment because I felt like I had done the due diligence other than just saying no to the project.
Yeah.
But my learnings from that definitely were if I'm going to take a financial risk to do a project with a very limited amount of time and with a new technique or a new glaze, then I need to make sure that I get payment at least to cover the materials up front. Mm. And not saying that I've put that into practice yet, because most of my orders are like people that I've been working with for years.
Yeah.
And no one's really come with any requests like that were like, yeah, that glaze isn't going to do what you want it to do. And the only way that I can prove it to you is to show you, you know, at the end of the day, she said they weren't going to be sellable in her shop and then just stopped talking to me.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's a hard lesson learned on that one, definitely. Yeah, recovering from that one's sucky, because like you said, you just don't make money from it. Because presumably as well, the logo or whatever on it was specific to her shop. So it's not like you could sell them anywhere else.
Yeah. And it was a color that it wasn't like a traditional color that people really lean into. It was more specific to her whatever event she was doing. And ultimately they made nice gifts for people. So they were still functional.
Yeah.
But they weren't sellable. And, you know, what I lost there was my confidence in just trusting that people will do the right thing without, you know, whatever. And I probably could have pushed her, like, whatever. But when communication was ended and there was no response, it was just kind of like, you know, maybe I'm dodging a bullet here.
Yes.
Maybe this is a provable moment, not necessarily about myself. Well, it kind of is about myself, like that not everybody has the best intentions or has the right character traits that would help a small business recoup when they're asking for something that's outside of what's provable. Yeah. And then the other side of it is that I shouldn't be so damn trusting, because I knew what was going to happen. Yeah. Right. I knew that was going to happen, but I still forged ahead.
I think it's listening to yourself. It's listening to the alarm bells that are ringing. Like immediately you said, like, oh, she put these parameters on me, this, and this. My brain was going like, that's exactly the kind of customer you don't want.
Mm.
Because if the first order they're putting in, they're putting time restrictions, they're doing something out of your wheelhouse, they're doing all these different things, like the chances of that going wrong are just getting higher and higher and higher. And the chances of that customer just not being happy with the end result are getting higher and higher. And then exactly as you've said, who's taking on the risk?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And to be fair to me, I had done like probably 15 to 20 orders with this person before.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
But she had consistently been pushing the envelope with what she was asking for. It was like every single order was like a brand new product design. Every single order was a lot of experimentation. And I hadn't set the precedent. I'd been working with her for so many years that I didn't ever go back and say, hey, there is cost associated with, you know, me having to come up with a new shape or, you know, experiment with a new glaze or whatever. I just kind of was still naive in my business aptitude that I almost set the wrong precedent with her. So she just assumed, you know, I'm just going to come to you. I'm going to ask for something. Yeah. You're not going to explain to me that you're pulling out a miracle out of your ass every single time I ask for something.
I'm just going to continue taking advantage.
Yeah. And shame on me for not educating what that was taking. But also, you don't know until you've kind of been seasoned.
Yeah,
that though you are taking on a risk every time you take on a new assignment from somebody that isn't like part of your catalog.
Yeah.
And I sat down at the beginning of the year, I was building out my wholesale catalog where I was like, okay, these are the things that I'm willing to do multiples of, where I can batch these out, no problem. And sitting down and looking through like everything in my portfolio, I started to weed out the things that I just do not like making multiples of. So I took those out of the portfolio. I was very specific about, you know, that there would be added cost if you move away from, you know, what this generic look and feel was, that, you know, there's possibility for cost implications. So I feel like that was definitely a learned attribute from this last project.
Yeah.
And I'm really proud of myself this week that like I went through and I cleaned that up and I published it for my wholesaler clients. And that's super helpful. But I, like you, Rasmus, I get hungry to try new things, and I use, and it's maybe not the best thing to do, but to use client time and money to educate myself on whether or not I can do something. And
I mean, it worked on the sword I did a couple of weeks back.
Right. I mean, when it works 9 times out of 10, it's hard not to just keep doing process. But I think doing like building your wholesale list and building out like what your parameters are for your business is a good illustration for you visually as a person to say like, okay, here's my wheelhouse. Anything that like pushes outside of these things, I need to really seriously question myself. Like, why am I doing this? Is it worth me doing it? And does it require materials and equipment that I've not had a chance to spend time with? And I think that probably would have saved me from that disastrous order. And I mean, it was like 70 pieces. So it wasn't like 15 pieces they were ordering. Yeah. It was 70 pieces. It was like sets of things.
Yeah.
And then the other, one other failure that I had was not telling my potential customer that my prototypes aren't for sale.
Right.
It's okay to give I'm okay giving a potential client a prototype of something that I'm making for them or you know, that I've been working on. But I didn't realize that I needed to tell them not to sell it, that it's not a retail item, because then I found out later that my prototypes were sold and they made money off of something that like I was sharing with them.
Yeah.
They went and turned around and made a profit.
Yeah.
Off of something that wasn't really sellable. So like along with that, it was the same person. So along with that, it's like communication.
Yeah, absolutely.
The biggest takeaway for me is that I need to create my boundaries and stick with them. And that has saved me in the last couple of years since that.
Yeah, because as someone who works in retail a lot, if a company certainly comes to me and they go, oh, yeah, whatever, we would just assume, oh, well, we've not paid for this thing, but it doesn't look like they want it back. Okay, well, that's just extra profit, or that's a free gift towards something else, or you know, we can put that in the box of someone wants a level of compensation because some, not anything's gone wrong, but they've perceived that they've like lost out somehow. So you want to do something to sort of like smooth the waters or whatever, and go, oh, well, you know, how about this free gift? You know, so it's not necessarily cost the business anything, but it's something that the other person feels, you know, that they've let's be honest, they feel like they've won because they were threatening, you know, they might threaten you with a bad review or something. So you give them something, so they feel they've won, but you're just like, well, that was just sat in the box of the freebies. So yeah, great, you know, I'm glad you feel better. Not cost us anything type idea.
Silly question, just about actually that. Would it make sense to actually make like prototype not for sale stamp?
Yeah. But again, it goes back to communication. Like,
yeah.
I didn't communicate that.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think it was even a feasible thing, like that they would just take my work and sell it and make a profit off of it. But like, I could put that on there. Plenty of people do that. Plenty of companies do that. Okay. We do that with products at my day job, is we put NFS or, you know, combined with, you know, other parts or whatever. But it's, again, it's an ethical question to me when you're a craftsperson, it's an ethical thing, but also am I communicating what can be done?
Yeah, it sounds like an education piece, because I would not have considered the fact that wasn't sellable at all. Like it wouldn't have even entered my head, because that's not the world that I'm from, if you see what
I mean. Yeah. But you're also working with multi-million-dollar companies that are sending you a helmet or, you know, a lathe tool. You're not working with like a craftsperson that is sharing with you, like, here's what I'm making. Are you interested in carrying it? Like, again, it goes back to communicating. Like if I didn't anticipate that it was going to be sold, I may not have known to say like, hey, if you don't want it, or if you're not using it, please, can I have it back?
Yeah.
Or, hey, if you want to sell it or you want to gift it, you know, I'm okay with that. Like it's again, like setting the precedent, like, okay, well, I couldn't necessarily be too pissed off that that's what they did with it.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't communicated the intention. Yeah.
If you had communicated the intention, then they did it. Like, yeah. you almost need to go to the point of saying, this is an item not for sale. If it's found to be for sale, you will be billed for the cost of the item, blah, 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 or, you know, with an extra fee or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very much just about managing and communicating well.
And you don't know what you don't know. No. Like, you don't, until a situation comes up, you may not recognize it as being a problem. And yeah. It really, I think it all goes back to when you accept an order and when you, you know, work out the details. And if you're going to do a prototype or if you're going to, you know, just wing it and do the whole order in a process that you've never done before, and you kind of feel like, I'm on shaky ground here. Like, yeah. Being able to communicate that back with your client and saying, like, here's my concern. This is what I expect if things fail, or this is what I need from you in order to make sure that I don't become insolvent. I need to be able to pay for the materials or the time that I'm going to spend. I'm not trying to make a profit off of you. I'm just trying to, like, make sure I'm covered.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. You're making me think about a couple of things that have happened with me where I've been very fortunate. Last Christmas, I was doing a load of shaving brush handles for a guy. And the first pattern he gave me, literally the first batch I did were 150. And I churned them out. And he barely glanced at me. Oh, yeah, these are great. Would you like to do another load? I'm like, yeah, sure. So these are a different pattern. Here's the pattern. I'm like, oh, okay, fine. Didn't really think anything about it. He's not a professional turner. He does a bit, but I'd gone out of my way to help him streamline and become more production so that he was more cost effective. And I turned, I think it was like 50 or 75 of these things, and I brought them to him. And he was like, none of these are the pattern I gave you. I was like, what do you mean? It's like, well, here's the pattern I gave you. Weren't you using the template? And the way he turns is he keeps putting like this little pattern up. It will take a little bit away and then he'll put the pattern up. And like, so he, like, the production of this thing is taking him like 30 minutes for a shaving brush handle. And I'm like, no, I set the calipers up. I worked out what I did. And then I was just like, boop, 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 turned the shape and joined the shapes. And it's like, well, this isn't the hand. That there needs to curve in here. And he'd gone from like, oh yeah, that rough shape's fine, to like, this needs to be spot on, precise. This needs to be this here and that there and whatever else. Mm. So it's not necessarily it was a communication issue as much as it was a perception of, oh, he's happy with this. And then the pattern he gave me, there were a couple of features on it that I thought they looked like he just wasn't very good at making like a traditional shape. So one of them I just kind of blended in, but I didn't ask him. That was me being very arrogant. I didn't ask him and say, so is it meant to have this little like 2 mil step here? Or is this just that you're not good enough at being able to turn a curve at this point? Like, you know, what's the actual thing? But he was really gracious. And he was like, he basically emailed me before I even got home, because I just said to him, look, really sorry. Like, just have them. If you can use them, great. Don't pay me for my time. Like, you know, I've obviously made a mistake, blah, blah, blah. And before I'd got home, my phone pinged with an email, and he said, I've had a proper look at them all, and I reckon I can work them all so that they're usable. So I'll pay you half the fee because you've done the majority of the work. And I, you know, I even went back to him and said, look, don't feel obliged to. I'm more than happy. Like, I, you know, and he said, no, I think that's fair. And he did, and he paid me, which was, you know, he didn't have to. It was like, it was a thing. And we've, you know, we've met and spoken several times since then. He's not had any more work for me, whether or not because he doesn't want to or because he's just not had the work. Either way, it doesn't really matter. But it was just this situation where I was suddenly just like, not that I thought I was better than him, but that my expectation of the pattern was just like, oh, well, that just seems like it's this. And I just didn't even think to ask. Mm. You know, I'd kind of, and it was arrogance. There was no getting around that, really. But it was also, I should have taken the time to like send him a WhatsApp and gone, hey, this bit here, is it meant to be like this? And this bit here, would it be better like that? What do you want? You know, like, here's the first one. Is that an acceptable sample kind of thing? And just done all of that. And I just didn't. I just thought, oh, that's fine. Partly because I was like, I've got 3 days to turn like 75 of these damn things. In reality, that was 3 evenings, not days. Mm. And so you sat there just trying to do them as fast as possible and just like go through it all and whatever. So that was definitely very valuable to me on exactly as you've said, Heidi, about communication, managing expectations, being really sure what the customer actually wants and why. Because I've got a couple of commissions at the moment that are outstanding because people have just said no rush on the delivery time. I mean, one of them's over a year, And I just keep putting it off because there's an element of fear. I'm daunted a little bit by it. And I'm like, but then I've got to process that. I've got to glue those bits together. And then I've got to do this. And that's, okay. And so I'm taking like these micro steps towards getting it done of like, I bought that bit of timber. And then it will be like 3 weeks before I then process the bit of timber. And then it'll be a couple of weeks before I glue that bit of timber to another bit. Because I'm scared about actually making the shape. So the further I am away from being able to put that on the lathe to make the shape. And I was even, Raz, I think I spoke to you about this like months ago. I was even like, that's going to be too big for my current lathe. I've got a bigger lathe coming. So I just put it off completely until the big lathe's here. But that's still not going to be here for probably another couple of weeks. And then now that's going to have to go straight to a storage unit rather than into the workshop. And then I look at it again and I actually realize, actually this thing's only going to be like 9 inches in diameter and the lathe will take up to 14. So actually, like I'd blown it out of all proportion in my head. And when you scale it back down, you go like, oh, no, actually, this is perfectly manageable. I was just scared of like doing it. So I still haven't done it. I still haven't bought the wood or glued it together yet. But I am, the customer is aware of that. Like I've had conversations with him and I've explained the situation that's going on at the moment. But even then, I'm a month behind again. I said, I'll try and get something done for you by the end of July. I haven't started yet and we're nearly at the end of August. And he's very understanding. And I have said to him several times, look, I might not get this done at all. Like he's not paid me any money yet. So he's not out of pocket. But it's this thing of like, I've had drawings done and stuff that I can send him that he's willing to pay me for. But he said, no, it's fine. He said, it's not a rush. I just, it'd be great to see something finished and you get a prototype done and give me an idea. But this is one that if he likes, he wants to do a run of 100.
Oh.
And that's where the fear is really coming from. It's not so much making the one. It's making the one and then knowing that that will then be the expectation for potentially another 99. And he wants them all the same. And they've got to be sanded well enough that they can then be painted and all of this kind of stuff. So there's just so many levels of stuff that I've put into my head of going like, I'm scared. This is potentially very lucrative, but also potentially I could break me because exactly the same thing as Heidi's just said. I make like 99 and then you suddenly go, none of these are usable. Fortunately, he's only said he'd want them in batches of like 15. So it's not like it's all at once. But even so, that's still a lot of time and money spent on something that, just could epically fail. So mine's the opposite end, guys, just to bookend this. So Rasmus will run headlong into it.
Yeah.
Rasmus is the kind of man that the commanders in the First World War would have loved because they would have said over the top, and he would have already been halfway across no man's land before the whistle went. He was gone straight on in. It's all fine. They'll work it out as they go along. And I'm the one that would have been hated and probably in the lockup because I would have been like, when you say over the top, like, are we talking like an approximate speed? Are we using ladders? Is there an order in which we need to go? Like, what equipment are we using here? What's the main objective of reaching the other end of this run here? Can we have some practice runs? Is there any training that could be given? So we're the two opposite ends of the scale.
Yeah, I think so.
And we both kind of get there in the end. It'd be interesting to see whether Rasmus gets there faster than I do or whether it's when you actually come to the creation of the thing, but it's not a test we can never fully justify.
Yeah.
One thing I have learned, though, and that is not solely from this project, but also like being honest and being sort of brave enough to communicate with the client when you fuck up, that tends to solve a lot of the anxiety around fucking up.
It sure does, yeah.
But like it doesn't solve the issue, but then you're taking responsibility and the client is sort of no longer accusing you of being a terrible person.
No, because you've communicated with them the whole way. Yeah.
And managing expectations and all of that helps a great deal, I find. And it's only when you sort of fail to communicate and the client have to reach out to you, that's sort of when the animosity pops up.
Yeah. I hate that feeling when you know that you're going to have that difficult conversation and your ears get hot and your neck feels like
it's feeling worse when you realize you've got to have that conversation or when you've sent the text or email and you're waiting for the response.
It's the before. There's a release after I've done the deed. Like, it's like, okay, that's done. Now it's out of my hands. Like, however they respond is however they're going to respond. But it's that, like, and it happens to me at work too. Like, if I've got to present bad news or a difficult thing, and it may not even be my fault, but I get that like sensation of just deep heat in my neck and my ears. And like,
it's interesting. I wonder, see, because I'm the one that quite often has to deal with that with customers directly at work, even if it's not a project that I've been dealing with or an order I've been dealing with, there's an issue and whatever. And I've almost been subconsciously delegated to do that because I think I just talk at people until they give in.
Yeah. You're like the honey badger.
Yeah. I just kind of like
Dan Tarrant, don't give a fuck.
Well, it's more of a case of it's not my stuff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like if someone's kicking off because they've had something delivered and it's been damaged on delivery, it's like, yeah, but we didn't damage it. We didn't send out damage. Like we appreciate it's damaged from delivery and we appreciate you're upset. However, we will do our best to rectify the situation for you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the customer then starts going down the route of, oh, but I needed it for a project for this weekend and there's a job and then that's going to put me off. So now I'm losing business and then I'm losing money. So who's giving me compensation for that? That's when I don't get upset, but I'll internally get irritated because what they're doing is they're projecting their failure to plan onto us. Like if you knew you had a project to be done by this weekend and required a specific piece of machinery and then only ordered it 3 days before you needed it, and that includes then you've got the ordering one day, so then it would get delivered the next day. So then you've got a day's grace if there's anything wrong and it's the weekend. That's not my fault.
That's
and
not your
I'm
failure.
Not going to be held accountable for that. So that's when it gets very, very difficult. And I have to go into hyper polite Dan. I said, well, I'm terribly sorry to hear that, sir. you know, and you start, you know, you start talking around.
You can
around
have things. An OnlyFans.
Audio only. But
well, depends what people pay
you've
for.
You've called the operator.
So you have to start sort of, it does make a difference when it's, I find it makes a difference when it's, whilst I'm still invested in the business that I work in, at the end of the day, no one's going to die if like the thing doesn't arrive on time or whatever. It's frustrating or mildly annoying.
I mean, generally speaking, nobody is going to die.
No, but that's the way some people feel. And,
oh, yeah. And I understand where all of that sort of stress and anxiety is coming from. And I've also had to deal with those kind of clients where like, you're mad at me because your thing you didn't buy from me broke and now you need the thing from me faster than normal people.
Yeah.
Sorry, how is that my problem?
Yeah, but you don't get to say that. Or maybe you do.
No, well, it's Norway.
I mean, you're walking around with axes the whole time.
Who else are you going to go to?
we call it axe diplomacy. It's you smile a lot, but you hold heavy objects with sharp edges.
Yeah,
well, it sucks to be you.
We were very well versed in that a few hundred years ago, I think.
And then
or
we got
certainly
tea,
experiencing
got
it.
Civilized.
That was meaning we experienced it from you lot, is what I was saying.
No, but we had the access part.
Yes, that's what I was meaning.
Yeah,
we were,
but
we
then
were on
you
the
got
receiving
tea. Yeah, but fine, never mind.
We
I
had
a
tea
joke.
Before that. We had, sure, we did.
I have to turn this car around.
Yeah.
You can make it get back there.
Absolutely. Right, well, I hope everyone has taken something away from this episode, even if it is that all three of us are insane.
Yes.
But it should be a delight to listen to, however our voice is stated. And we look forward to seeing the comments and things that appear from any of you, either via email or via direct message to all of us. You can reach us on Instagram at setting_up_shop, SHOPPE. And you're more than welcome to send us DMs on there. I am atrocious at posting things on there, so you won't see regular content currently. But hopefully we will resolve that in the near future. Otherwise, you can reach myself, Dan, at tarrants.co.uk. Tarrants, spelled TARRANTS.co.uk. That is my Instagram handle. That's how you can get hold of me on Facebook and also my website. And Erasmus is at Erasmus Loewen, L-O-E-N. And Heidi is at Whitehall_pottery. All three of us, if you've got a specific question, an amusing point to mention, or even your own catastrophic failure that you just need someone to reach out to and talk through and to kind of help you out the weeds a little bit, we'd be more than happy to do that for you as well, or potentially point you in the direction of someone who might be able to assist depending on your craft and if it's not in our wheelhouse. If you've enjoyed this episode and if you would like to support us more than just by listening, there are some really easy things you can do that cost you no money at all. The first one is recommend us to friends, family, other people you might think enjoy this kind of thing. Send a link around from wherever you're listening it to. You can leave a review for us on your favorite podcasting app, whatever that may be. And you can also follow along for free on our Patreon account, Patreon. If you follow for free, what will happen on there is you will potentially get notified of when new episodes are coming out. For whatever reason, I've posted on there more frequently than on Instagram recently. Don't know why. If you wished to throw some spare change our way in this time when no one's got any, you can also subscribe for $3 a month. And that will get you access to the after show that we're about to record, where you can hear even more insane ramblings because it's behind a paywall. So it's not necessarily rated a hard R, but it's closer to it than this episode necessarily is. So
it's a light L.
It's a light L. There you go. It's the Bud Light of the hard R circumstances. And it can see it's already going to be a good episode the way it's just going downhill.
I haven't even had a drink yet.
Yet.
Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate you listening as always. Look forward to hearing from you. Give us some feedback and we will catch you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Meh.